Welcome. It's Thursday night and time for Psychic Viewpoint on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com. Spirituality, psychic development, love and relationships, manifesting prosperity, and more. You now have access to the world's most renowned spiritual teachers, healers, psychics, and mediums as you join us during this transpersonal collective experience. Sponsored by PsychicAccess.com, where all psychics have been interviewed, verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you the highest quality of quality service. And now, on with this week's show.
Greetings, friends. My name is Stephen, and you are listening to the Psychic Viewpoint, sponsored by PsychicAccess.com. In a moment, Jesse Ann Nichols George will arrive to discuss the benefits of Nordic mysticism mixed with angel work. But before we get started, please join me in welcoming my co-host Steve tonight. Hi, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you, Stephen. How are you doing?
Oh, I could not be better. I'm excited to speak with Jesse Ann Nichols George tonight about angels and Vikings. It's going to be quite an interesting interview. But before we get started, would you mind telling us a little bit about yourself and what you do at Psychic Access?
I'd be happy to, Stephen. Thank you. I'm a psychic medium, which means that I connect with people in spirit and channel evidence of their continued existence. I am also an astrologer, and I enjoy using my astrology to help people better understand themselves, answer those questions about what's happening in life, what's coming up, etc. And it's a lot of fun. I'm very proud to be part of the team.
Oh, we're definitely glad to have you. The mixture of mediumship and astrology is quite potent and definitely a wonderful mixture. And just to remind everyone, you can find Steve at PsychicAccess.com. He is one of our favorite psychics, and definitely we're glad to have you here tonight, Steve. Now, first we're going to let me tell you a little bit about Jesse Ann Nichols George. Absolutely wonderful person. And Steve, you certainly need no introduction to Jesse. You have interviewed her on this show before, I do believe. And she's an author. She has authored four books, which are founded on the principles of compassion, which is kind of interesting tonight because we're going to be speaking about Vikings. And you might have the rather natural question of, you know, how do Vikings mix with compassion? Well, we're going to answer that in a little bit. But in her books, in her writings, Jesse likes to teach how to bring joy into all areas of life, as well as to open yourself up to your own passion and to create your own path in life and to manifest joy and indeed fulfillment. Jesse created the Genesis Clearing Statement and the Compassion Tour. She's an integrated development specialist with over 33 years of experience working with clients and assisting others with their life processes. She's also a 13th generation spiritual healer, energy tuner, life, relationship, spiritual and wellness coach, holistic and natural lifestyle advisor. For more information about Jesse Ann, please visit her website at jesseannicholsgeorge1.com. And that's the numeral one. Hello, Jesse. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing very well, Stephen. Thank you.
Oh, I'm so
great
happy
to be here
to hear
with
that.
You.
We're definitely glad to have you. You know, I was just sort of musing in the moments before the show, you know, how compassionate were the Vikings. You know, when I think of the Vikings, I think of these plunderers, these conquerors. But in talking to you privately, you raise my awareness to them as alchemists and magicians. And I was hoping maybe you could elaborate on this concept of the Vikings as alchemists.
You know, it's very interesting because, Stephen, a lot of people do have that perception. It's amazing what we've been programmed with visually, perceptually, because usually in pictures they're, you know, this giant race of people with this really hearty, you know, build to them and everything. Yeah. And, you know, what I find really exciting about it is actually they work so much with the seasons and the cycles and the nature and the resources at hand. And that's a lot of why I refer to them as an alchemist. and their creation, because they're really blending, you know, you talk about master herbalists in a way, you know, they had the earth, and that's what kept them strong. It was this knowledge base. It was this wisdom of how to work with these cycles and these seasons and the herbs and the plants and the nature. And even if we look at a lot of things that are built into that Viking culture, they relate it to trees. You know, we see the yew tree, for example, oftentimes related into that Viking culture. So, you know, when we look at it, the alchemist is able to bring these different components together. It's able to use what's at hand and create from there. And that's exactly what they did.
So it's interesting to hear you describe that, because as you're talking, I'm reminded a little bit about the Celtic Druids. Is Nordic mysticism and spirituality, does it have anything in common with the Celtic Druidism, would you say?
You know, I would say there are a lot of similarities there. The Druidics were maybe a little more peaceful group overall than, say, a lot of Nordics. The Nordics had their own level of peacefulness. They were very, you know, they would be very much maybe like some of the Irish and the Scottish, and they're very real, and they're going to tell you like it is. they're not going to sugarcoat it. They're going to hang out. They're going to do their drinking, whatever they're going to do. But yes, like the Druids, and they are both nature-loving. They're both cycle-oriented. They're both seasonally oriented. And I would say, you know, that there is common ties between the two of them in there. Now, of course, the Vikings were going to fight for what was theirs. They weren't going to lay down and let people take things away from them. And, you know, they had the physical strength to do that defending, to do that guarding of their lands, if you want to say that. Now, the Druidics, you've got a lot of different branches of those up there. And, yes, also very much into the trees and the plants and all of those things. But they would have been very happy not engaging in battles most of the time. You know, the Druidics were, you know, they liked their rites and they liked their ceremonies. And if we go into the regions where the Vikings came out of, and we start looking at places like Iceland and Greenland and Norway, you know, they're still observing a lot of ritual, traditional time ritual. And so there's another common link there, because the Vikings, for example, they would do a lot of ritual practices prior to, say, going to battle. They wouldn't just go to battle and start fighting people. You know, they were going to be well prepared on every level.
Right. It's interesting, because in your work, you've authored a lot about the importance of compassion. And, you know, when I think of the Vikings, their aggression, their urge to explore, I think, wow, could it be possible that sometimes to be compassionate, we indeed have to be a little bit aggressive sometimes, or, you know, we have this idea of compassion always being soft and receptive, but the Vikings and your spiritual work in this area make me think that, you know, hey, sometimes the compassionate option might be the more uncomfortable one that requires a little bit more strength.
Well, and compassion comes from, when you really get down to a lot of what's in the Viking culture, I mean, they're a very tight-knit culture. And, you know, they cared tremendously for the earth and what they were doing for it. You know, I'm not going to say that they were compassionate necessarily on every level, because you'll have vegans out there that go, well, they were meat eaters, therefore they're not compassionate, you know. But when you look at it, they had big hearts. They loved deeply. They loved passionately. They, you know, there's a lot of kind of chivalry, if you want to say that, in that culture, of the men to the women in that culture. there's a lot of caring about family, a lot of caring about tribe with them, which is really, really huge. And so, you know, and actually one of the things, and I know we'll probably step into this, but there are actually some of the noted figures in the pantheon who are actually considered like compassion goddesses and gods. So Odin is involved in some of that. Freya is involved in some of that. And so there is this compassion piece there. You know, if we take a modern day example, you might take New Yorkers, for example, as a modern day example. You know, they seem very harsh and brusque on the outside, but man, they would do anything to defend family. They would, you know, they would do anything to take care of family. You know, you're there for family. You're there for your tribe. You're there for people. And the Vikings, you know, were like that in their times.
Well, you know, interestingly, you know, we find this ironic, compassionate side to the Vikings, but one theme that will emerge from this interview is the theme of polarity. You know, the title, it says angels and Vikings, and we forget, you know, we can't forget the angelic component here. So if we find this surprising compassion in Nordic culture, is there a corresponding sort of hard edge in the angelic hierarchy and the angelic energies? Or how do the angelic energies blend in with this Nordic mysticism?
And it's interesting because a lot of people, when I started putting this work out a little while ago, they're both components I've been working with for quite a while. And then I said, you know what, for some reason this is blending together for me. The angelic realm, we just like we have our stereotypes of the Vikings, we have the angelic realm that they're all, you know, light, airy, fluffy angels out there with their wings, and you know, it's light and peaceful energy and all of these things. What's interesting about that is that even though we have that light visual of angels for the most part, and some people say, well, what about the angels with the swords and things like that? Well, there are aspects of angels that defend, that are defenders in a sense, but they don't necessarily go to war or to battle, but they are protectors in that sense, guardians in that sense. And so, you know, they're oftentimes depicted in these different ways, but they're oftentimes depicted so peaceful, and we get a very feminine energy off of the angels. A lot of times we think of them as a very feminine energy. But the angels are actually related to the air element, if we look at elemental factors. And that's an interesting piece because that then puts them into a masculine energy. And here we have the Vikings that have this huge, you know, big, hearty energy to them, and yet they're really associated with earth energy. They were earth people and people that lived by the waters and lived on the land. So they're actually a feminine energy culture, and the angels are actually a masculine energy culture. So, you know, that's where we start to see this little yin-yang dance between them. That's where we start to see that, you know, the Vikings are representing the earth, and we see the angels, and they're representing the spirituality realms. So we have this literal heaven and earth balance that's going on between them. And, wow. You know, I know a lot of people look to the Mayan cultures, and they look to the Indian cultures, and the pyramid rings, and the Egyptian cultures, and all these different cultures. But the thing about the Vikings is they've always held the silent power. If we look at our Icelandic regions, if we look at the Norse regions, they've always been silent power, and they're showing that even in today's time, they're showing silent power. And they're not ones that sit there and go, hey, look at me, I've got all the prophecies. They're just doing. And no. And that's another piece of the alchemist aspect as well. They just simply do.
I think that's very interesting because it's such a paradox. I want to just make this clear here. You're saying that the Vikings actually represent a feminine principle because of they represent the earth element, which is receptive and nurturing and causes things to grow, and it's the angelic sphere that actually represents the masculine side of the polarity. Now, this is very interesting to me, and I'm curious, how could this benefit somebody spiritually? Is it a situation where the angelic realm is fertilizing me, as it were, fertilizing me with inspiration, and the Viking dynamic causes me to aggressively pursue that angelic agenda?
In a sense, yeah, because the angelic realm is giving us all of the intellect. It's giving us the know-how. That's the spiritual realm holds the wisdom, it holds the knowledge, in a sense. And so as we look at that, and we look at that masculine principle, it's going to inspire us, first and foremost. And as it inspires us, it's going to help us discover the information that we need to take action. You know, you really can't take action if you don't know what action you're going to take, and if you don't know anything about what you're doing, you know, you're not going to get too far. So you have to get that information piece first. It's like if you're going to clear something out of your sphere and you're going to resolve a challenge in your life, you have to understand what the challenge is before you clear it. You can't clear what you don't know. So
absolutely,
the angelic realm gives us that knowledge. It gives us that base. It gives us that wisdom. Now, the interesting thing is angel energy is actually very neutral. You know, it's there to help us. It's there to allow us to give things. But how we come at it and what we do with it then becomes our responsibility. Now, when we blend that with the Viking piece, and as we know, the balance of heaven and earth, you know, if we only live in the spiritual realm, if I only live way out there in all of my thoughts and my little spiritual woo-woo house or whatever you want to say, right, nothing's going to happen for me on this earth. The fact of the matter is I might be a spiritual being, I am a spiritual being, but I'm on earth. And so if I don't produce on earth, that's going to have an effect on my spiritual being. So there's this beautiful dance there. So then when we bring in the Viking energy has the strength. It has the willpower. They were hardy. They were able to endure through some of the coldest, harshest conditions on the face of this earth. They were built for that hardiness. And so when we draw on the Viking energy, now we can draw on the strength that allows us to actually implement the inspiration and the thoughts into motion. It allows us, and it gives us the ability to endure through the process and the journey in order to bring things to fruition in our life, which then comes full circle back around towards the angels, where we can stand in our own so-called angelic or spiritual self.
Okay, well, let me make sure I'm following properly here, because I think that we're on the threshold of something vital. So the angelic realm can help me understand what I don't know. It can tell, because it stands to reason, if I'm ignorant of precisely the things I'm ignorant about, then how can I ever correct my ignorance? I don't know that I don't know. So the angelic realm points out to me that which I'm ignorant even of being ignorant about. And the Viking component, it gives me the strength to break through the natural resistance that the universe or God or whatever throws up. Because it's been my experience, Jesse, that when you want to do something, you know, the universe puts the inspiration to you, but also puts up some challenges. So that Viking component, I think, is very important to break through. Am I following this properly?
Exactly. So yeah, the angels are going to, they can definitely help us see what we're unwilling to see, unable to see, And yes, when we start to see things, there are challenges because we realize there's work to be done. You know, there's steps to be taken. There's action that needs to happen. And once you have knowledge, you can't just stand stagnant in that knowledge. So drawing on the Viking energy, then it does, you know, again, because oftentimes, like many people in the last few years, as we've been in the so-called ascension process in society and times, it feels very cold. It feels very harsh. Conditions have been very challenging. We've had to deal with a lot of things we don't like. And, you know, it's very interesting. I was recently in a discussion with somebody about things that we can't go through these challenges. We can't have pain in life without having a tremendous amount of love. And I did my most recent video on this that I did for the month. And the deeper the pain, the deeper the love that's there for us to tap into. And the Vikings, you know, they might have seemed very cold-hearted, but the reality was they were in cold outer conditions. Their hearts were actually pretty big, and their hearts were not cold-hearted, and they did feel deeply, and they did feel the pain and the losses along the way. And it just showed that, you know, also they had this tremendous amount of love there, which then ties back again to the angelic realm, which, you know, loves us deeply enough to give us the experiences, knowing that we're going to face challenges and knowing that we will have these things to break through, because it loves us that much to want to see us evolve.
Well, let me ask you this, because you're a 13th generation spiritual healer. That's a very long time. You obviously have experience dealing with the angelic realm. Something. Which do you have a particular side that you feel more of a leaning to, or are you equally drawn to both the angelic doctrines and the Nordic philosophies?
You know, it's very interesting, Stephen, when with all this heritage that I have behind me, I still had to journey and learn on my own and find my own teachers along the way and my own guides along the way. And so I drew immediately to the Norse culture. I drew immediately to that pantheon of deities when I was selecting deities to work with on my path. And so that was a big piece there for me. And I was probably much more earthly focused at that time, material world focused at that time. And so that naturally connected with me. Over the years, I've particularly in the last, 9 years, going on 9 years, oh my gosh, this summer, I have gone in much strongly to the angelic realms and being more in that arena. Now, it really is about blending the two because we're not meant to sit in either one. We're meant to enjoy what we have here on Earth. We're meant to indulge and have some pleasures and have some good times here. But we're not supposed to be attached to it. And so now in blending these energies, standing strong in my angel energy, I can be unattached, and yet I can still have the heart and the soul and the passion that goes with the Viking energy to really enjoy it here, whereas a lot of people, when they step into some of those more spiritual realms on their path, they get very depressed or very down even because they're disconnecting so much from the earth. And then what happens is they disconnect from receiving what they need to make it on this earth. And this is where we see the big spiritual material conflict, if you want to say that, come up. And so now for me, it's kind of like I delved into this one and I've delved into that one very fully, as well as many other areas and aspects of myself and my soul being.
Well, let me ask.
And I'll claim it all. You know, I'll claim it all, and now it's integrating all together. So I'm very excited to start this new phase of that integration.
You plucked that right out of my mind as to the next question I was going to ask you about, because you're a specialist in this field of integration. And anyone who studies psychology would know that the concept of being integrated is important. And you're a specialist in integration. And I was going to ask you how the Viking angel polarity fit into the larger framework of your integrative therapies.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is all these pieces, because in my integrative work, a big piece of my work is about working with the natural cycles and the seasons and being in flow. You know, now being in flow, it can bring a lot of good times, but it doesn't mean that you're going to be without challenges. And when we learn how to work with these cycles and these seasons and the planetary influences that are a natural part of what's on Earth, and everybody's feeling a little thrown off these days because the weather patterns are not fitting the norm. You know, I'm sitting in Southern California these days, and today it must have been like 85 degrees. I don't know. It was like 80 degrees at 8 o'clock in the morning, right?
So
where is it that warm in February? You know, on the other hand, you have other parts of the country, and they're asking to toss snow into the ocean because they have no place to put the snow because they're 25 feet high and walls of ice.
Yes.
The integration, as you say, is important, and these pieces all fit together. They come to us in ways that we can connect and relate to, and for some people that's a religion, for some people that's a belief system, for some people that's Buddhism, whatever it is. But some of the fundamentals all come down together, and when we integrate this and we use the wisdom and we flow with the seasons, you know, it's like anything, they're not separated. They're not separated out. They're a spirit, there's divine presence in everything on the face of this earth. So to ignore something like the Viking energy would be to ignore the divine. And if we ignore the divine, where are we? We're not going to experience a lot of things. You know, you're going to sit there in that space going, why am I poor? Why am I this? Why am I that? Why are these things happening to me? And you're going to be in that victim space, but when you take a look at it and you integrate it and you say, great, now let me dwell on this piece, because we need the strength and we need the wisdom. We need the nurturing and we need the inspiration. We need the two of them working harmoniously together. The masculine and the feminine component is in everything.
Yes.
Whether it's a relationship, whether it's a plant, whether it's in everything. You can't have one without the other, even though we say this is masculine, this is feminine. It's got both.
Well, I was just going to say, this isn't all just empty rhetoric for you. You've set your Viking ship to sail, metaphorically speaking. You've been doing a lot. I wanted to ask you how your travels have been going for you, and how this very refined and elegant spiritual system is working out on the road.
It absolutely is, and it's a whole different realm because, you know, I now travel full time with my work, and I do what's called the Compassion Tour every year, and it's workshops and it's events, and I'm gradually building up to bringing in some fundraising events and other things into this work. I'm also working with individuals on this particular tour, which is another piece that I implemented this year. But I literally went from like a 2,300 square foot home to a mini cargo van, of which I have a little kitty traveling companion with me.
That's awesome.
Which I wasn't planning on picking up, but you know, when they show up in your life, you have to take them.
And yes.
And so I am now living this in a whole different realm, because it's funny, for years I built up having the resources and the space to have like my own little place that I could do, you know, my own little room in my own home for meditating and prayer work and ritual work and all of these things, and got that. And then here I am now out on the road, and I have none of that. You know, it's not the easiest thing to just sit down and set up doing ritual someplace. And so I am now back to where the Viking roots, in a sense, really, the Nordic Viking Druidic roots of, okay, I've got sand, and I've got leaf, and I've got this, and drawing on that wisdom, but I've got all the elements to work with, but I'm having to draw on it from nature now, as opposed to, you know, being able to set up my nice little table someplace and, right, you know, hang my things on the wall or things like that. So, yeah, it's really getting put into action. And when we realize that all the resources, when you integrate all these pieces, you come back to that piece of everything is within me. All the power is within me. And while it's fun and it's nice to have the space and the tools and all of that about me, I still have some tools, and I do some healing work with singing bowls and things like that along the way, and I take those out into trail areas and natural regions and work with them. It's a whole different realm when those things aren't just easily accessible and you have to think about packing something in someplace. Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask you this much, because the Viking energy is quite restless. I mean, it's so interesting, because they are earthy, as you say, very much tied to the earth, and yet there's something restless about the Vikings. They can never sit still. They're always sailing the oceans and ranging far and wide, looking for new places to make their own. And sometimes you probably have encountered people to help, and they are lethargic. You know, they lack this restlessness. They lack even the desire to try to be energetic. They're just very lethargic. So my question to you is, which comes first? Is it possible to, when you're confronted with a very lethargic person, maybe to focus on the angelic doctrines to try to lead this person to the wisdom and the inspiration that will set them into action? Or, you know, must you begin with, you know, the issue of not having the energy and try to focus on, you know, kind of motivating the person to force themselves into activity?
Well, I don't believe in having to force ourselves to something. I mean, granted, sometimes we have to face things that we don't always like or that might be uncomfortable. And you know, you're right, this Nordic energy of mine, I do get a restlessness, and that piece definitely runs through my veins, where I want to travel, I want to explore, I want to go out, I want to be on the move. And that piece does come alive in me when I'm on the road. There is this sort of passion piece in me that I'm spending some time actually tapping into before I get too active in traveling the road, because I'm going to be there soon enough. And when we look at lethargic people, and I come across people that are like that, I really let a lot of times my angel energy come through. You know, it's a blend between the passion of the Viking energy and the angel energy. And that's a kind of a meeting ground of them, because we're not going to take action unless we're inspired in some shape or form. Now, that inspiration might be paying our bills. That inspiration might be having a home or not having a home, or whatever it is. But there's something that we need as human beings to motivate us in some way. Now, when the light of the angel energy, so to say, the spiritual energy, is flowing through us, we naturally get an inspiration. We want to do, we want to share, we want to create. You know, that's very creative energy. The ideas are generating. And that naturally will create energy in a person to do. if a person is feeling lethargic, it's usually because there's some sort of sense of self-defeat or fear, or, you know, the motivation hasn't become strong enough. You know, it's like they say, you know, when one weighs out the other, you know, you'll let go of the pain when the pain gets bad enough, and then you'll choose the other option. But yeah, I would work more from the inspiration aspect first, because here again, if we don't understand why somebody's lethargic, if we don't understand what's behind that, you don't really know what direction to go. I mean, you could get up and just start going and trying something, yes. But if they're in that lethargic space, they're not. But I find that people, they look at me and they come in tune with this energy and this blending of energies, and they naturally become inspired. The angel energy naturally flows out of me when I'm around people, and it then inspires people, and they look at it and go, wow, you're really walking your talk. Like, you're not just saying go out there and do this. I mean, you're really committed to this, and you're really, you know, doing what it takes, and you're not giving up on this, and that creates a lot of inspiration.
Yeah, I think a lot of the lethargy that I've seen, especially pertains to leaving a toxic relationship, for example. We become complacent, and I'm thinking, wow, it would take, for some people I know, it would take the energy of a Thor to make that person real, you know, have enough courage to pull themselves out of a dependent relationship or something of that nature. You know, it would take a Viking type of strength to do that.
Well, and we do become complacent in situations, whether it's work situations, family situations, relationship situations. Relationships are very common. We accept things, we put up with things that we wouldn't put up with other people. We do the same thing with family, because we sit there and go, well, it's just easier to deal with it than it is to make this change. But eventually your energy gets so drained that it's like, I have to make this change for survival, basically. And it does, you know, it can cloud us more and more and more. And it's hard. It's like any of us, if we're really drained out, it's hard to get up and go. And so, yeah, drawing on that Nordic energy can really get things in motion for us.
Right.
It can, you know, see us, again, through those harder times, through those challenging times, because the Vikings, I mean, they lived in challenge after challenge after challenge, and it wasn't just, I wonder what I should eat today kind of challenge, or, should I stay in this relationship or not? You know, it was, you know, fighting against below freezing temperatures, and it was staying warm, and it was life and death, you know, which is part of why they had so much passion in them, because everything was life and death.
We're about to break for a one-minute commercial, but I just wanted to point out before we get there that even though the Vikings were famed for their violence, today the Viking countries are among the most enlightened and progressive in all of Europe. So there's hope there. There's a higher evolution. Everyone, you can find Jesse Ann Nichols George at jesseannnicholsgeorge1.com. We will be right back after this one-minute commercial.
A new era in psychic services has begun. PsychicAccess.com. You can connect with our psychic advisors by telephone or chat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All of our psychic advisors are interviewed, fully verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you quality service. We're living in some very troubled times right now. More and more, the world's problems are affecting us on a personal level. You don't have to deal with this alone. Our highly accurate psychics, caring advisors, and talented mediums can help with situations you are currently experiencing, and can let you know what the future may hold for you. All new customers get a free 6-minute reading. All you have to do is register. Why not visit us now and get a free reading at psychicaccess.com.
Welcome back to the Psychic Viewpoint. I have with me Jesse Ann Nichols George from Jesse Ann Nichols George, then the numeral1.com. So, Jesse, welcome back to the show from the commercial break.
Thank you. Great to be back.
I kind of wanted to shift gears here a little bit because with the Viking tradition and the angel tradition, we have two types of divination available to us. With the Vikings, we have the system of runes, and then with the angels, there's a system of angel cards. And I was just curious about your opinions on these two systems of divination.
And it's very interesting when you talk about those two different systems of divination, and it kind of brings us full circle back to where we were talking before about the angelic realm being that air energy, and the Vikings and the Norse being in that earth energy. Because if you look at the Nordic divination system, the runic systems, and granted you'll find a lot of different terms associated with different things, when you look at their system, everything is earthly-based. It's feeling-based. It's planet-based. You know, again, the trees, right? That are in there, the birch and the yew tree and things like that. So again, they're associating it with nature. They're also associating it with material world things, money and hope and success and joy and comfort and pleasure and all of these types of things. Now, when we look at angel card systems, what do we find? We find tidbits of wisdom. We find spiritual lessons. And so, you know, I when I first thought about that concept of you know, how to of blending these things, you know, it's fascinating to me to think about blending the two of those into a divination system of its own. And the runic kind of does that a little bit. You know, if you have the traditional rune system by Ralph Bloom, for example, You know, he gives a little bit of insight of this happening or that happening, but it's not quite the wisdom factor that you get like from the angel cards. And for me, what I did is I offered a service starting at the beginning of this year, and I've opened up to doing a service that actually blends runic symbolism and Norse energy into crystal gemstone grids. And the crystal gemstone grids are, of course, very angelic realm as well. And that's working with some of the higher energies and the planetary energies and the DNA energies and all of these aspects. And combining these aspects together with quantum healing and quantum energy dynamics for people. So, it's a fun little piece to bring together. When you start to bring these systems and you find this, boom. And just for example, I was practicing around with this little system that I put together with it, and I laid out my grid and stones with the runic patterns and everything and sigils, and I lay it down, and I put my energy into it, and I'm like, I just want to see for, you know, a little bit of fun, what I can do with this. And I had to take my car in for maintenance the next day. I was in San Antonio at the time, finishing out my 2014 tour, and put it down. And I knew the inspection I was going in for my vehicle was like, I don't know, $450 or something like that. And by the time I walked in the dealership and I just mentioned something about that, because, you know, I saw something about Black Friday stuff, you know, whatever, and before I knew it, by the time I left the dealership, my $450 bill was $200.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, well, that worked pretty good.
That's amazing. I was just going to ask you how you kind of evolved into blending these systems together, because it is rather innovative and remarkable.
I listen a lot to my guides, and I see what's naturally flowing or resonating at a given time. I just tap into my own angel wisdom a lot and my own soul energy, and I kind of commune and say, you know, what is up with these things? And what was happening for me was, you know, personally, I've worked with these systems and interwoven stuff a long time, but it's just been recently that I released this as something available for people to take advantage of. But I oftentimes get messages from the universe, the divine, whatever, in runic symbols. So
interesting.
They oftentimes speak to me in runic symbols. Like I'll look across the room and there will be a marking on the wall and it will, you know, be for the symbol of openings. Or, you know, I'll look at something in the sky and it will have a symbol of journey there, whatever it is. And so they just naturally appear to me that way. They speak to me that way. And it just was like hitting me like, oh, I'm supposed to put this out of another service.
Right. Well, I was going to ask you this as well. As I work with you going along this path, would I encounter perhaps some of my own guides who might help to shape my evolution?
I think always we're going to start to open up to our own guides. The more we work with, and I love symbolism, that's, you know, it's key in both the angelic and the Viking culture. Symbols are powerful in every culture, really. Anytime you actively start to work with things more, and or if somebody comes to me and has me do this type of work for them, it's going to open up their guides and they're going to become more aware of symbols themselves. They're going to have that communication there. It's always there. We just don't always know how to see it from them. We just don't always know how they're speaking to us, which happens to be through things like runic systems or pictures or symbols and their signs or different things along the way. And as we start to learn to read those, as a matter of fact, that's one of the things that's on my 2015 tour that I'm presenting in workshops is signs and symbols. And so it's, you're definitely going to connect stronger the more you activate things and actively work with these different pieces. You're going to develop a stronger connection with your guides.
So learning how to read the runes would be a great place to start. Is there a steep learning curve to learn the runic symbolism?
Not really. I mean, it's like anything, it's kind of going to depend on what somebody's memory is like. But even if you don't have a strong memory, you can even go online and Google up some of the different charts for the runic alphabet and see how they coordinate or things like that. But I think that I don't see it as any harder than anything else to learn. And in some ways, I think it's easier to learn because of being symbolic based, our mind automatically connects a symbol as a meaning to us easier than just a word.
Right.
You know, words have their own power, and that's a whole different realm I could get into and do at least an hour or two on that. But, we connect to the pictures. Visually, a lot of people will connect to the picture or to the symbolism. And that, in some ways, makes it easy, kind of like tarot cards, but there's not as many of them to remember.
I'm very intrigued by this phenomenon of your eye discerning different runes in different situations. Have you found that to be helpful for you? Does it sort of like step in when you're at a crossroads or when you need some extra guidance or anything of that nature?
Absolutely, and I ask it a lot when I've been on this journey, and I say, you know, what do I need to know or what's happening in this situation? And inevitably, there will be a sign that will show up to me just plain as day. And, you know, matter of fact, I was just sitting here in this room looking around at the markings on the wall as I was saying that, and I was thinking, what is going to come from this? What's going to happen? And the first one that showed up happened to be related to Jera in the runic symbols, which is kind of these interlocking V symbols, and it represents peace, happiness, and hope, and earlier efforts realized. So I thought, oh, well, isn't that interesting? it just naturally does show up. So it's the answers are all around us. If we ask the questions and we take the time to be still and we really look, we'll see the answers.
And it's probably something that I can expect to get better at over time as I in advance in my studies and spend time meditating upon the runes and spend time meditating upon these principles. I would imagine it's something that, in other words, would need practice, eh?
It does, yeah. Unlike anything, it's just practice to see how it flows for you. And it's interesting if you ask a question and then you get your answer and then to see how it manifests. Because for some people, you know, again, it could be these different aspects. And, you know, for example, with one of the rooms, it might need physical strength for them. For somebody else, it might be more related to the passions and sexual desires or things. So you learn how it's coming through for you. And I find here, again, is where a lot of times the angels come into play because they're making sure we're seeing certain messages. So it's like if you look around, I'm sure that you could easily just sitting from your chair, if you just even looked ahead of you, there's probably 100 different symbols there in front of you. But at any given time, oftentimes what will happen is there will be a little light or something that will shine on, or one will seem a little bit brighter or will stand out in some way. And that's oftentimes the angel shining a little bit of light saying, okay, we want you to see this one out of the 100 or 1,000 that are in front of you. This is the one we're wanting you to see.
Fascinating. It's certainly a journey worth taking, and I'll tell you, I'm fascinated by this. And why don't you tell us, Jesse, how we can grab your attention, contact you to learn more about this extremely helpful system. I'm excited about the possibilities for it because I know plenty of people who lack the angelic inspiration and could use some more of it. And I also know plenty of people who could use a little bit more of the Viking stuff. So how do we get a hold of you?
Yeah, best way is to go on to my website, which is JesseMNicholsGeorge1.com. And there's contact information on there. There's every month I have a monthly special up on there. I do videos, new videos every month with global tips on things. I've got my services tab. My books are on there. Everything's up on there. And, you know, they can always email me, Jesse@JesseAnnNicholsGeorge1.com. So it's actually pretty easy to get a hold of me. And usually I'm pretty quick at getting back with people. As I get more and more into my tour schedule, it might take me a little bit longer to get back to people. But I would say most of the time I get back to people within 1 to 2 days.
Well, let me ask you about Facebook. Can I find you on Facebook?
Absolutely. People can find me on Facebook. My name, Jesse Ann Nicholls George, on there. I've got also my business page, Activating Compassion, is on there. Of course, I've got a group that I belong to, I created. I'm just one of the members there, right? I created it called the Spiritual Nourishment Network, and that's a lot of different people sharing their work on there. So that's a fun little group to belong to, and a lot of people sharing a wealth of information on there and insights. And, you know, people can contact me through Facebook. They can contact me through LinkedIn. Whatever works for them in that sense. I'm pretty easily accessible, like I said, and usually, you know, sometimes once I'm actually into my tour schedule, It might take me 2 days. At the longest I think it's ever taken me is about 3 days to get back to somebody. But most of the time I'm back to somebody in under 24 hours.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, check out her Facebook page, her website. My question was a rhetorical question. I know very well about your Facebook page. The Spiritual Nourishment Network is an incredible resource. I love reading the various postings that you put up there. Jesse, thank you very much for joining us, for enlightening us, and for expanding our horizons.
It's such a pleasure to be here with you, Stephen, Just was very excited to delve into those because it's not something I get to talk a lot about, but I think it's something that is definitely a huge important factor for the times that we're in right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's something that should be shared, and I'm honored that we could have helped to share the awareness of this refined and powerful system. Jesse Ann Nichols George, thank you so much, and we can't wait to have you up here again in the future.
I look forward to it.
All right. Blessings on your trip.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I don't want you to go anywhere. I'm going to take a moment to make a few announcements. We're going to have the second half of the show so you can get your free on-air reading from our gifted psychics. We're going to announce that call-in number later, so be sure to have your pen and paper ready. If you couldn't get to the show last week, you'll find the recorded archive link as well as archives of all previous shows on psychicaccesstalkradio.com under the Archives tab. Please feel free to circulate the archive links, as always. That's what they're there for. And also circulate the future show details to your friends and family, other people that you think might can make a good use of it. What we want to do is to connect with as many of you as possible, so please share that link. Also, visit psychicbloggers.com to learn about everything pertaining to the paranormal, everything from reincarnation to the how-tos of psychic development to soulmate seeking. It's all there. Psychicbloggers.com. Don't miss it. If you are interested in a reading from the best professional psychics on the net, go to psychicaccess.com, where you can find the best verified and accuracy-tested psychics, each with his or her own unique gifts. Every psychic on the site has a detailed profile for you to find out more about her or him. It's an honor working with Doug and Psychic Access because of the high expectations required of each psychic. All of the co-hosts here on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com work at Psychic Access, and if you'd like a personal reading from any one of us, be sure to visit us at PsychicAccess.com. We would love to hear from you. Incidentally, site owners and webmasters, you can earn 50 cents per minute on every reading for traffic referred to PsychicAccess.com. For more details, visit PsychicAccess.com/webmasters. If you like our show, invite your friends to join us in our chat room and listen to the psychic viewpoint. There's something for everyone. So please spread the word. We very much appreciate it. So now we get to come to that part of the show where I get my co-host's opinion of the interview material. And for technical reasons, I only have one co-host. I say only, but he is certainly one of my favorite, if not my favorite, co-host in all of creation. Steve Frampton, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you, Stephen. Really enjoyed the interview.
Yeah, Jesse Ann Nichols George certainly is impressive. And, you know, as soon as I found out she was specializing in Nordic mythology, I immediately had to have her on the show.
Yes. And I have a couple of friends that are from Sweden. And one of them has a family in a place called Gotland, which is in the, which I think is a, I think I'm sure it's an island, but she told me that it's a place that's steeped in mythology, folklore, and tradition, and it's somewhere that I would very much like to visit because it just sounds really magical.
Yes, it does. It's in everything, and we relate the planets to the days of the week, but of the week unique in their planetary names and their in the names of their deities. Thursday is the day of Thor, and Friday is the day of Freya. Well, you know, supposed to be Jupiter and Venus, respectively. So I've never understood how the names of the gods, how they served for the Nordic gods. I mean, Wednesday's Mercury's day. You know, it's not Loki's day. It's very, I've never understood that.
But it is interesting when you look at the myths, you look at the gods, the characters involved, the archetypes, you can in effect map out the correlations between Nordic mythology and mythology rooted elsewhere in the world. And I find that very interesting, that somehow people everywhere had the same understanding of the energies of the archetypes. Do you see what I mean?
Yes, yeah, I do. And you know, we might not think that the ancient Vikings would have possessed that. You know, if you take the time to study their mythology, to study their spirituality, man, you'd be amazed at how sophisticated it is and how sensitive it is. I wish I had another hour to ask Jesse about her Valhalla and how we might can attain Valhalla here in our lives. Alas, the time ran out, did it not?
We should have her back because it's a fascinating subject. In fact, we haven't done many shows at all on mythology, Stephen, have we?
No, I don't think we've ever done any shows on runes as a divination system. And they are really intriguing as a divinatory system. They work quite well, and they are, in fact, an alphabet. You know, and they're sort of distinct from other divinatory systems, such as the Tarot. And even the I Ching, you know, in the sense that it's more linguistic, you know. Tarot is rather baldly pictorial and hieroglyphic in its nature, but the runes, you know, I think they are more purely aligned with the philosophic principle of the logos, the word, you know, very important philosophical concept. Even, you know, systems, you know, such as the ceremonial magicians of antiquity and things of that nature. For them, the logos was vital. For that reason, I think the runes are an intriguing system of divination. So,
have you used the runes yourself, Stephen, to ask questions relating to your life? I haven't. The reason I ask is I haven't used the runes before.
Yeah, I have used them actually. They are interesting. I'm not as adept with them as I am with the tarot or other divinatory systems. So there's definitely a learning curve there. I would, you know, to use them more. But I found them to be sound. I found them to work out quite well and to have a great power to make me aware of high standards for a divinatory system. I expect it to give me a ping, to give me a signal that the waters for the ship of my life are about to get shallow. You know what I mean? Maybe I need to set another course. And so the runes are quite powerful in that regard, Steve.
Yeah, as I said, I haven't used them, but I have friends who do use them and use them quite adeptly. And they always say that they're extremely insightful, very accurate.
Yeah, so it's something I'd like to get more experience in. The angel cards, I've never used angel cards before, Steve. How about yourself?
I haven't either, no. I've always just used a normal card deck or a tarot deck. I haven't really experimented with these other decks like the angel decks. I'm quite a purist. I want to really focus in certain areas and not try to do everything. You know, there's so, as we've said before, when it comes to metaphysics and the provision of insight, there are so many different tools, but some of them have such depth, such complexity, like astrology, tarot, numerology. You can spend a lifetime studying them and still be learning even more at the end of your life. And so I'm trying to really focus on a core toolkit, in effect.
Yeah, you have to draw the line at some point, right?
Well, I feel if I try to do to add more tools, then I'm in effect taking time away from my my research into the tools I'm already using. I don't think people generally realize how complex astrology and tarot are.
Yes, they're quite difficult and demanding, and they demand a certain amount of discipline in their study, for sure. They demand a lifetime of study. I don't think that I'll ever be able to plumb the depths all the way to the bottom of all that the tarot has to indicate. I don't ever see myself abandoning the tarot either, even as I thought more sophisticated systems of divination. I've always found the tarot to be quite powerful in its predictive power. I mean, in its ability to discern the futures, you know, it's quite spooky. So I definitely need more experience with the angel cards. I think they do bear comparison, though. If I'm not mistaken, I believe the decks are curtailed, where in an angel deck there are fewer cards than in a standard tarot deck of 78 cards. So, you know, there would be a learning curve. But I know a lot of psychics on Psychic Access, they swear by them. So,
yes, I know a lot of people that use them very successfully. I've got nothing against them at all. Nothing against angels, honestly. I remember once, Stephen, giving a reading to a lady, and I really felt that I wanted to talk about Archangel Michael. And I mentioned him, and we both saw the outline of a being appear in the room, and it was blue. It was really quite vivid blue. And I was then speaking with a colleague that said to me, well, apparently Archangel Michael always appears as a blue color. And I was quite blown away. I do remember once I had to go to a military base to help with a really challenging situation. There was a family, they had about four or five young kids, and the father was quite traumatized. He'd returned from Afghanistan, and they were having really dreadful poltergeist activity. And when I was driving to Kentucky, and it must have been about 11 o'clock at night, it was dark, and I just jumped in the car to go down there because they said they needed help. Anyway, when I was about an hour away from the military base, the mother called me on my cell phone and said, Stephen, Megan, my daughter, told me to tell you that a man just appeared to her, and he said that his name is Michael. Well, literally about 30 seconds before the phone had rung, I'd asked Archangel Michael to help. I'd said, you know, please, can you help protect this family? Help us to deal with this situation. And as I said, 30 seconds after, the phone rang, and the little girl was saying that she'd seen a man arrive, and that he'd said his name was Michael. That really blew me away.
Well, you know, I was going to ask you, because you are a medium, and, you know, I was curious if, you know, sometimes you might occasionally get messages from a spirit that's a bit more angelic in character, you know, how to tell the difference, I guess, between the type of... Is there a way to tell the difference between beings that you are channeling or dealing with?
I say absolutely, Stephen, because you can feel the... Well, I think the correct word to use would be the authority of the spirit or the entity. So when you're connecting with somebody's family member, it feels familiar. There's that sense of familiarity. But when you're connecting with a guide, a client's guide, if that guide is very highly evolved, I'm not saying they're necessarily on the angelic plane, but if a guide is highly evolved, you can feel it. You can feel the authority of that being. You almost feel in awe of that being. You almost feel like you'd want to tread very carefully, as though nothing you could say really could even compare to what they may know, what they may wish to communicate. It's quite interesting. It's like, you remember when you were at school, you know, and the headmaster or the headmistress walks into the room, there's that sense of authority, you know, I'm not going to mess with this character. And that's how it feels.
The spirit that is not the authority may broker a connection with the entity that is the authority. Does it ever work out that way? You see what I'm saying?
Say that again. I missed part of the question.
Okay, sure. Does it ever happen where the spirit sort of bridges gaps so that you communicate with the authority, an entity that is the authority? Do they ever bridge that gap for you, like in an introductory capacity?
Well, I believe, there are different forms of mediumship, but I believe that my guides are always facilitating the communication. So I, when I'm sensing a client's relative or loved one in spirit, I feel that it's my guides that are giving me that information, that they're acting as an intermediary, that they're helping me. So they are working with that person in spirit, but they are channeling accurate information to me. It's almost as though I think often a person in spirit needs an energy boost, needs a conductor, and that's the role I see my guides playing. My understanding is that it's my job to correctly sense what they are sharing with me. It's their job to work with the person in spirit and to correctly convey information to me, so that I can then convey it to my client.
Oh, very interesting. Well, thank you for clarifying that for me. I've always found it to be a fascinating process. Steve, I'll tell you what, man, I'm going to go ahead and throw out the call-in number for people who would like to get a free reading on the air. The call-in number is 724-444-4851. I'll repeat that for you. It's 724-444-4851. That you're aware that each call will automatically be placed on hold and will be answered in the order received. So just relax, listen to the show while you wait. And once you get on the air, we ask that you're very clear and direct with your question, because we can only take one question per person so that we can get to all the others who are waiting for a reading. Again, that number is 724-444-4855. Okay, you were sort of explaining to me and enlightening me about the mechanics of, I guess I don't even want to say obligation, but you made it clear that you had a job, a role in the exchange, and that the spirit also had a role, or would it be correct, responsibility? I mean, I almost trembled to suggest that the spirits would have a responsibility. How do you see that? You said they have a job to do.
They do. I mean, if you think of it, when I'm with a client, my job is to help that client. But a medium raises their frequency. So you raise your frequency, you heighten your awareness, but spirit have to lower their frequency, and it takes a lot of energy to do that. And you see, when spirit lower their frequency and we raise ours, then there's a stronger connection. But if you think of somebody that's recently passed to spirit, they may have been very ill beforehand. They may be very low on energy. They may be in a period of recuperation or convalescence. So they don't necessarily have a huge amount of energy to be pouring into mediumship or connecting with other planes of existence. So spirit guides can provide that energy.
It's very interesting because, you know, one of the big themes of tonight's interview was the theme of polarity. I think this is a vastly underestimated occult law, the polarity. And one of the most paradoxical elements that came out of the interview, Steve, was the idea that the Nordic mysticism represented the feminine prong of this system, whereas the angelic doctrine brought about the masculine energy of this system. Very interesting, because I would have probably have assumed those two have been reversed. But I'm reminded of the order of mind. You know, we have the explosive outward force of Aries, but then it's trapped in the cold, nurturing crucible of Taurus. The energy is forced to do work, which brings about growth. So it's this concept of polarity and the law of polarity that I find interesting, Steve. I suppose we might could call it the alchemical underpinning of this entire system that Jesse Ann Nichols articulated for. To me, it's just incredibly intriguing and also quite useful and practical.
Well, I think if one thing's for sure, we don't know a lot. And I was thinking about our comments relating to metaphysics and spending a whole lifetime studying not even metaphysics in its entirety, but tarot or astrology, and still at the end of that lifetime be discovering more. And I was thinking, well, I should imagine you arrive in spirit. We get to spirit and you know, we're quite proud of all the effort we've made, proud of everything we have learned or the extent to which we have mastered astrology or these different tools. And then spirit say, oh yes, but you know, that's minor compared to what we're going to show you now. And I think we have a caller actually,
Steve. I'm sorry, I might be broken. Yeah, maybe you didn't hear me. I think I'm breaking up, my friend, but you actually do have a caller from New York.
Great. Thank you, Steve. Well, who's calling from New York?
Anne.
Hello, Anne. How are you?
I'm okay. I just have this question. So I have a friend. His name is David in Maryland. And about a year or like 2 years ago, he kind of didn't want to talk to me anymore because he thought I was kind of using him in ways. And we just talked on Facebook, and we sort of had a bit of an argument over politics, and then I sent him a follow-up message. And I just want to make sure he's not annoyed with me again.
I don't feel that he is. I feel that he respects your opinion, to be honest with you, but you have very different opinions when it comes to politics and social matters. So I don't feel that he's terribly upset. I just feel that the two of you come from very different perspectives, but that's really enriching. If we all agreed, it would be boring. So, no, I don't feel that there's a problem there. I feel that you will be in contact with each other. I feel that you'll interact with each other more in March, actually, at the beginning of March. So I don't feel you need to worry. And I do, you know that you worry a lot. You know, if you're not worrying about one thing, you're worrying about something else. And when one thing is resolved, you're concerned about something else. And many, many people are like that. And we've all got things that we're working on. But I feel that you're quite self-critical, and you get really quite anxious about things. And in all honesty, if you've just clearly articulated your perspective, your belief, respectfully, then you've done nothing wrong. So try not to be so hard on yourself. Try not to be so worried about how other people are interpreting what you say or what you do. just be yourself and be genuine, be respectful as you are, and try not to dwell upon what another person may or may not be thinking. Because I would say, when you're concerned about something, you're really only about 20% of your concern is valid, and the other 80% is your tendency to worry. So I don't feel that there's an issue here, but I do feel that you need to worry less, you know?
Okay, yeah. All right, well, thank you very much for that.
Try not to do that. You're welcome. Good luck.
Bye.
Thank you very much. If you would like a reading from Steve, you can find him at psychicaccess.com. Now, I have a caller from Michigan. Hello, Michigan.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, good.
How may I help you this evening?
Can you hear me? Oh, okay. Okay, so I have a question. I just got some tarot cards and did like a three-card spread reading for myself. And for the first card, I got the King of Swords for the past. And then for the present, I got Judgment. And those two made sense to me, but for the future one, I got the Seven of Swords, and it kind of baffled me. So I don't know if you have any insight for my future of what the Seven of Swords might mean.
Sure. Well, let's troubleshoot this situation here, okay? I'll tell you something. A lot of times when I have a puzzling judgment to make and I'm kind of confused, the it's a little pro tip for you there, okay? So the number seven, and interestingly enough, I always associate the numerology of seven with achievement, because it's made up of the number three and the number four, right? So the number three is a number of easiness and sort of an effortless flow of energy. The number four is the number of manifestation. So I'm not sure what deck you're using, but I'm going to guess that the swords are probably the air element, right? In your deck.
What was that? Well, it was the Karamusha, which is kind of... I'm sorry, you're like breaking up on me.
Okay, sorry, I got a Skype issue here tonight. I was asking you, in your tarot deck, the swords are the air element, right? Because believe it or not, they're not always in the air element.
I believe so. I'm new to it, so I believe so.
You're new to it. Okay. Well, yeah, probably in your deck they're going to be the air element. And so what we're dealing with in the Seven of Swords is an achievement in the area of communication or in the area of intellectual accomplishment, like studying for an exam or passing a test. Or again, probably since we had King of Swords, this is going to be a person, a man who is quite intelligent himself. Quite authoritative over you somehow, perhaps. And so the seven of the air element means that you're going to achieve a good conversation with, perhaps. Or again, it could be dealing with achievement in passing some sort of a test. It could be a formal test, like you get in a class, or even a test that life throws at you. And you know what, believe it or not, the air element, of that nature. So it could be dealing with an achievement in money as well, but it's a fairly victorious card one way or the other, the way that I see it in my deck. Most decks, they might see it as kind of negative. Probably the way and I'm not sure what your question was when you cast those three cards, but probably what it seems to me is that it's going to be a very serious conversation in which you will advance your agenda somehow with the individual, presumably the and it would be in the future.
Okay. All right. Yeah, because I wondered, I think I know what the King of Swords was, and I understood like kind of what the Judgment was, but I thought the Swords was, from the meaning of it, if you read like in the book, because I'm new to it, was kind of like deceit or trickery of some sort. So I was like, oh no,
that's the,
what is that,
that
supposed to mean? But
didn't it? Now that's the way it's usually interpreted in the Rider-Waite deck of tarot. But I'll tell you something. I use a little bit of a different system. You know, I don't usually interpret that as being negative, and it's mainly because of the number issues that I explained to you. You know, the number 3 and the number 4, which they go into making 7.
Right. You know, it's really funny because every time I look at the clock, it says 34 on it. Oh, sorry, you're like breaking up on me.
And so, to my thinking, it represents. Oh, sorry about that. Well, what I want you to take away from this is that I don't interpret that 7 of Swords as being negative at all. I interpret it as being more, more of an achievement and more positive, more of a victory in the realm of communication and mental ability. A victory. It's a good card.
Okay, and good. So, well, then that makes more sense because I just applied to school, so maybe I'll get in.
Oh, not only are you going to get in, you're going to be busting your butt. And because the number 7 also has to do with, you're going to be relocating or something of that nature. So, you know, it's definitely a good card. So you've got a lot of good stuff to look forward to, okay?
Okay.
I'll tell you something. That King of Swords was probably the person who put the green light, the stamp of approval on your application, more than likely. It's probably the person who reviewed your application. But at any rate, you're going to get in, and it's going to be good for you, okay?
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
All right, have a great one.
You too.
Okay. All right. Okay, as my favorite show used to say, the A-Team, I love it when a plan comes together. I don't think we...
I used to watch that.
You like the A-Team? That was my show, man. Talk about Angels and Vikings.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I enjoyed that. And also, I enjoyed Battlestar Galactica.
Was that the one with Lorne Greene?
Oh, I can't remember the name, Stephen, but it was great. It was the original Battlestar Galactica, and it was really fun. But you know, I bought the DVD box set a couple of years ago, thinking, oh, I'm going to watch it again. And I watched it, and I thought, oh, this is really bad.
Yeah,
Star Wars. You know, you watch it again, and it's still just as good.
Well, I tell you, Steve, I want to thank you for joining us here tonight, and I'm having some issues with my connection. It's been some technical difficulties. We're going to go ahead and wrap up. Would like to thank Jesse Ann Nichols-George for joining us this evening, and would also like to thank Doug, who works behind the scenes to make everything happen here. Everyone, thanks for joining us. Have a wonderful week.
Hello, my name is Res Miranda. If you're having relationship, career, or life issues, I'm inviting you to experience what it's like to have access to professional, highly accurate psychics and spiritual advisors you can trust to care and help you. Register now to get your free 6-minute reading by telephone or chat. Get answers. Get access. Psychic access. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Psychicaccess.com.
Yes.